Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And you never know, but I would think that Toronto would take the bull by the horns. And then finally tonight at 6:30, the Blazers are at the Thunder, and Portland is up 2-1 in this. And I just love the Lillard-Westbrook, not just smack talk battle, but just pure talent battle and leading those teams. And Lillard to me is the guy. I mean, I love Damian Lillard. The fact that he went to Oakland High there on the corner of Park and MacArthur doesn't hurt, but just, you know, he wears a zero to be the O for Oakland, but he just backs it up. He's a fantastic guy. And I love Westbrook's talent. I'm not a big fan of him personally, but I love the talent. Do you think the Blazers win this game? Because I feel like the Thunder are at home and they're going to win. I think this is going to go 7, and I think Portland, who has home court, will win it, and then both these teams are going to be thoroughly spent.
Yeah, I figured this would be a long, hard-fought series just for all the reasons that you just alluded to. I'm not a huge Russell Westbrook fan. I respect the talent and the ability. He just strikes me as so unlikable, and you kind of put yourself in the shoes of one of his teammates. And, you know, could you imagine, we've all worked with somebody like that, rolling into work every day. And I mean, maybe, you know, this is just me reading from the periphery. I don't know, but it just seems to me like guy's kind of a jerk. And he seems to me like the kind of guy that you just wouldn't want to show up and go to work with every day. Now, hey, first Kevin Durant left, but then Paul George stayed, and everybody and their mama thought Paul George is going to the Lakers, right? He's an LA guy. No way he's going to stick with the Thunder. They gambled and they lost. You know, they tried to recruit him, but he stayed. And so you give him credit for that. And I'm sure a lot of that had to do with him wanting to play with Russell Westbrook. But just something about Russell Westbrook just never sits right with me. And I didn't like the way they behaved in their postgame press conference the other night. You know, this next question. It's just, it's childish. And you know, kind of harkens back to what I was talking about Kyrie a few minutes ago. Leaders lead in the playoffs. And we see that with the Golden State Warriors. They've got how many leaders in that locker room? And that's what allows you to, like, rally from 3-1 down in a playoff series. That's what allows you last year in the Western Conference Finals to win a Game 6 and win a Game 7 on the road. That's what allows you to win, you know, 3 out of the last 4 NBA titles. And I think a lot of these other teams, they could take some notes, absolutely. And Russell Westbrook, generationally great player. I don't feel like he empowers his teammates the way that I see other, like the true superstars. Individual talent could never be disputed. And that's, you know, kind of what I was talking about Harden a minute ago. I'm maybe seeing a little more of that right now from Harden. And I think in the playoffs especially, that's so important. Because even if you go out and score 40 points, 15 assists, and 10 rebounds, okay, well, other guys still have to be involved. And other guys still got to help you out. And I think a lot of that starts with the superstar of the team, in a sense, empowering them. And I just don't know that we get that from Russell Westbrook. But I do agree, based on their talent, and that this is a, you know, just kind of a fun physical matchup. And I do think this series probably goes 6, maybe 7 games. Clearly it's hinging on this game, but the Thunder, they're pretty tough at home. That's a tough barn to play in, and they're going to be fired up tonight. Because you feel like if you're the Thunder, hey, win this game tonight, it's 2-2, it's a brand new series. The Thunder, they've got to feel like they can go and win a game in Portland, right? I mean, the Moda Center is not an easy place to play, but hey, Thunder feel like, hey, we win this game, we get the momentum, and then it's game on. So yeah, I do think the Thunder will win this game tonight, but if you're the Trailblazers, you got to think, this is our chance to put the nail in them. I mean, anytime a team, you know, that had home court advantage is up 2-1, just like the Dubs tonight, this is your chance to essentially end the series. And so they got to play desperate.
One more NBA thing I want to get to before the break. The Los Angeles Times is reporting that the Lakers, in their search for a new head coach after dismissing Luke Walton, who of course is the Kings' new head coach, that Jeannie Buss and the GM, Rob Pelinka, have narrowed it down to two, Tyronn Lue and Monty Williams. Tyronn Lue, we know what he did with LeBron in Cleveland. You'd think, well, that just seems like a slam dunk. Have him come in here and do the same thing. Some people would say, no, it's not going to work like that. Monty Williams is a guy who was head coach of the Pelicans for a while. He's now a Philadelphia assistant. Seems like a lot of people are plucking Brett Brown's guys. Lloyd Pierce was hired away for the Hawks, and then Billy Lang went to St. Joe's, his alma mater, to be the head coach. But the thing that we heard some rumors yesterday was that the Lakers might not want to hire Lue because they'd figure that LeBron would have too much control. And my question is, well, yeah, if you're a GM, you want control, not a player. But we also know that for 8 straight years, LeBron had control and his team went to the finals and won a few of them.
Right.
So isn't it better to have LeBron control the team than the Lakers, the most dysfunctional team on the West Coast, control the team?
Right. And you know what you signed up for when you went and pursued LeBron in free agency. What? You didn't know he was all about exerting his influence and his control? I mean, come on. And this is where the Lakers get caught up in kind of fooling themselves. There's the perception of who the Lakers are historically, and then there's the reality of who the Lakers are in 2019, which is a trash basketball team that hasn't made the playoffs in 6 freaking years, okay?
Yay.
And that desperate times require desperate measures. And to me, bringing in an aging LeBron James. Okay, let me back up for a second. I'll stop short of calling that desperate. I mean, he's LeBron freaking James, okay? But he's LeBron James at, what is he, 30, 35 now, whatever he is, 34. He's no spring chicken and had the groin injury last year. Clearly, he's on the back nine. I still think, though, you don't bring him there if you're not going to build around him, right? I mean, what's the point of signing LeBron James if you're not? Obviously, he's going to be the focal point. So, yeah, he needs to have input in that. And your point's very well taken. LeBron has his influence, has his say. Your team goes to the finals. Now, I know this is the West, not the East, and there's a lot of more factors at play when you consider who they've got to go through in the Western Conference. But again, LeBron knew that when he came out here. That's why I felt like if winning more titles was the most important thing to LeBron, he would have stayed in the East. You don't come out to the West at this point with no other star power. It feels like the Lakers, their strategy is, well, we're really hoping to get a max player this offseason. And I'm sorry, like, you gotta have A, B, C, and D. And, you know, with Magic checking out the way he did, which is still just so bizarre and just blows my mind. The word I would describe for the Lakers is dysfunctionality. And, yeah, Tyronn Lue's going to come and save the day? I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, they changed their whole plan. They were going to go young. They were going to build. They had some nice young pieces. And then LeBron comes in. And you have a chance to get LeBron. I think you got to take it. But then at that point, now you got to win now. And then you go, we'll give you all our young players for the unibrow. I mean, it's a mess right now. And as a Warrior fan, I don't care about the Lakers.
No doubt. When we
come back, we're going to talk a little baseball with John Taylor from Sports Illustrated. Not the John Taylor from the Niners or Duran Duran. I'm Rick Tittle. He's Ryan Covey. Come on back. 95.7 again.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Thank you so much, Rick Tittle and Ryan Covey, with you this morning on 95.7 The Game. Happy Easter to those of you who celebrate it, and we'll take you up until 11 o'clock when we'll begin our live coverage of Warriors at Clips Game 4 in the Western Conference playoffs. Talk a little baseball this segment with our friend John Taylor, the fine MLB writer for Sports Illustrated. And, John, where are you in the whole, hey, it's only April type of thing? Or do you think, yo, every game counts, and we've proved that, especially with 2 wild cards, don't take it lightly. Where are you between those pendulum swings?
I mean, I think it's possible to feel both sides of it. Certainly, it is April. It's very early. Nothing is really – here's, I think, the difference. Individually, nothing is definitive yet because there is so little that has happened. There's some stuff you can look at and some performances you can look at, and particularly, I mean, you can start with stuff like patience at the plate, swing percentages, stuff. That's the stuff that supposedly normalizes first. And look at that and go, most individual performances, it's too early to say anything definitive. And the same can be said to a certain degree for team performance, but all these games count. You know, a win in April, Matt, is just as important as a game in September. So if you're a team like the Red Sox, or you're off to a bad start, you know, yeah, maybe it's not reflective of your true talent level, but those games still matter, and you're still in a hole now that you have to crawl out of. And more, I think more importantly than anything, if you're off to a really good start or if you're off to a really bad start, what the most important thing you have done is effectively either removed your margin for error if you're off to a bad start, or given yourself a lot of cushion if you get off to a really good start. And I think that's probably, to me, the most important thing, is that a team like the Red Sox is not just that they got off to a bad start, it's that they can't afford another bad stretch going forward. This has got to be it. You know, from here on out, they have to be a very good team if they want to make the postseason and or win the division. So I think, to me, that's kind of, you know, it is still early. I mean, it's only April 21st. You know, there's a lot of season left. But the stuff you've done already, especially on a, you know, on a pure wins and losses level, certainly has already an impact in everything going forward.
Yeah, the Red Sox already used their breakfast ball mulligan off the first tee, and now they just gotta play good golf the rest of the way. You know, that division is just fascinating. It's stacked. I mean, the Rays are off to a great start, and then here's the Yankees, who I saw the chart yesterday. I mean, only second base has been able to avoid an injury, and now Judge goes on the injured list with the, sounds like it's a pretty serious oblique strain. I mean, we know the Yankees are deep, but I mean, even the Yankees can't stand this many injuries. They're sitting there at 10-10. I mean, would you expect this to be borderline catastrophic for their season, or do you think it's something that maybe they can sustain?
I mean, the lucky thing for them is that, you know, the Red Sox are off to that bad start and certainly look like they have their own problems, and the Blue Jays and the Orioles are both terrible. So there's no real competition in the AL East right now for them aside from the Rays. But then the flip side of that is the Rays are both off to a very good start and look like a very good team. I don't know. It's really bad. You look at the lineup they could put together just of injured guys would be one of the best lineups in baseball right now. I think at Judge especially, you saw what happened to that team last year when Judge went down for about 5 or 6 weeks with a broken wrist when he got hit by a pitch. That was really the kind of slump portion of their seasons when they lost Judge. And understandably, because he does so much for them. He is their best offensive player. He is their, I think, he's their best outfield defender, I think, by far. And I think really importantly, he is such an important piece of that clubhouse and kind of a leadership and just in a leadership role. I think you really miss that. And I think this is a team that already kind of, not necessarily at a deficit with that, but certainly is down, you know, those kinds of important personalities too. And Didi Gregorius was a very kind of underrated piece of that locker room too. Certainly, I don't think that just because Judge is no longer, you know, I mean, he'll still be in the clubhouse, but just because he's no longer playing means the Yankees are suddenly going to be running around like chickens with their heads cut off. But I think just in terms of that lineup, that's a huge piece. It's that lineup is really nothing right now. And, you know, they get Sanchez back on Wednesday, I believe it is. They'll probably have Stanton back within the next couple weeks. But really, the Yankees, they're just going to have to hang on as best they can. Because the other truth is, I don't really see what solutions there are in terms of offense for them to add. I mean, certainly we're just going to have to wait to see how long they expect Judge to be out. But, boy, this team, I think if anything, you know, this pretty much between this and the Red Sox off to their terrible start probably solidifies the Rays as your AL East favorite at the moment. And again, it's only April 21st, but, you know, Tampa Bay is really, really kind of had the deck cleared for them as a result of Boston's bad start and all these injuries for New York.
And sticking in that division for just a second, you know, the Orioles, a lot of people were kind of, you know, morbidly fascinated with Chris Davis with a C when he was going to get a hit. But if you think about their pitching staff and what happened yesterday, the most home runs any staff had ever given up before May in Major League history was the Tigers in 96. They gave up 50. Here we are on April 21st. The Orioles have already given up 57 home runs. What is going on in the Charm City?
Well, for starters, the Orioles have a bad pitching staff. We all knew that coming into the season. Sure. They had approximately zero pitching options that you would realistically want. I can't think of a single pitcher on that team that if I were the general manager of a major league team, that's too extreme. But there are only like a handful of guys, four or five at the absolute most, between their rotation and their bullpen that I would want anywhere near a major league roster for starters. So that's obviously not helping. it's also not helping that the Orioles have assembled one of the worst pitching staffs ever in a year when the ball is so juiced that it's practically leaking. Like, this is something where it's not just the Orioles. We're also seeing it with Christian Yelich, with Cody Bellinger, with the good Chris Davis, and just the way the ball is flying out of the park right now. We're going to see some home run records set this season if things keep going the way they're going, because there is clearly something different about the baseball. There's nothing else you can point to. I know, you know, previously, you know, it's been said, it's the launch angle revolution. Oh, it's guys just trying not to hit ground balls. Oh, it's warmer weather or whatever. I mean, certainly warm weather does play a part. And I think the, you know, big difference between this year and last year is we don't have that same horrible cold snap that just lasted for all of April across the East Coast and the Midwest. But no, the constant here is the ball. Something is different about the ball. Something about the ball is causing it to go further, fly. I mean, there's already been a study by Rob Arthur at Baseball Perspectives pointed out that the drag on the ball, not to turn your show into a high school physics class, but you know, the drag on the ball is less, which means it goes further. That's something that can only be that has to be ball related. So, you know, it's just that's the bad luck, I guess, for the Orioles, is that, you know, they have this very much rebuilding pitching staff that now has to deal with a rabbit ball. And it's also it's one of those things where it just kind of makes you wonder. It's like, OK, what records are we going to see set this year, and how legitimately are we going to be able to view them when you consider that there is clearly something different about the very equipment that these guys are playing with?
Yeah, and I've always gotten a kick out of a launch angle, John. It's like the name of the game is to drive the baseball and hit the baseball, and that's never going to change. And so you can talk about launch angle all you want, but it's like, oh, you mean like swinging? Yeah, thanks. Yeah, great. So
if you talk to players, swing plane is something they've been talking about for literally decades.
Yeah.
You go to Ted Williams' Science of Hitting. That stuff he's talking about.
Right.
You know, launch angle is nothing new. It's just the terminology we're using for it and the way that we have new technology to help kind of make it easier to get to that point. That's the only thing that's new.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Hey, let me ask you about Christian Yelich. I mean, here he goes again, you know, on another tear, off to a terrific start. He was, you know, the catalyst in Milwaukee for the, you know, terrific season that they had last year. I'm looking at Christian Yelich. Maybe is the best player in baseball right now. I mean, it'd be hard to argue. Did you see this ascension for Yelich? I mean, we knew he was good in Florida, but man, he's taking it to another level.
So for starters, I will never be able to call any player the best player in baseball so long as Mike Trout is still alive.
Fair enough. That's okay. I can respect that.
Ironclad rules. As long as Mike Trout is alive, functional, and in the league, he is the best player, and there is no one will take that title from him.
That's
no matter
fair.
How many MVP awards he doesn't win. As for Yelich, I will say when he got traded to Milwaukee, I thought to myself, and I believe I wrote about it, because I believe I wrote about that trade when it happened. I think one of the things that I mentioned was that Miami is a pitcher's park, especially, you know, and especially for left-handed hitters, it's a hard park to hit home runs in. He was going to Miller Park, or whatever they're going to be calling it eventually, which is a great park for left-handed hitters, particularly for home runs. So I thought, you know, I believe I wrote, like, you might see some of Yelich's power potential finally unlocked as he turns a lot of what were kind of long doubles or long flyouts into, you know, into home runs. I certainly don't think anyone saw this coming. So, I mean, you'd be crazy if you said you saw this coming. He's got a home run per fly ball rate of something like 60%. That's Barry Bonds territory. You know, this is something you don't see unless you are either one of the greatest hitters who's ever lived or a walking chemistry set. You know, and I'm not suggesting that Yelich is doing anything untoward. I just, you know, I thought he would be good. I thought he would be a good fit for Milwaukee. I thought we would see some breakout potential. I actually had him as a dark horse NL MVP candidate last year. But this is just crazy. And also, not to take anything away from him. Some of this is the juice ball, you know. But that's kind of the frustrating thing about what this season is going to be. I think in the same vein as what we kind of felt in the steroid era, where we're sitting there and going, okay, but how much of this is quote unquote legitimate? You know, what's real and what is just this ball goes further? You know, in the same way back in the steroid era, thinking what's real and how much is, you know, a huge dose of HGH.
Rick Tittle and Ryan Covey with John Taylor of Sports Illustrated, the baseball writer. A couple more questions. You mentioned, I like the way you put it, the good Chris Davis. or Oakland's or Chris with a K, whatever. But Oakland signed him to a two-year extension for about $33 million. And in Oakland, that's pretty much a Bryce Harper type of contract. And at first I thought, wow, what a hometown discount. For a guy, no one's hit more home runs in the last three-plus years. But maybe Chris Davis and his agent sat down and said, look, I'm 31. I don't really play defense anymore. I looked at, Nelson Cruz, who's a bit older, but he only got 14. And I don't want to hang on a vine. I really like it here, and they want to keep me. So why not?
It strikes me a lot in the same vein as Matt Carpenter's extension that he signed with Cardinals a couple weeks ago, where it's certainly Matt Carpenter and Chris Davis are both great hitters. Carpenter's a little better of a defender than Davis is at a more premium position. But at the same time, like you said, Davis is 31, and I don't know when he turns 32, but his next season will be his age 32 season one way or the other. Carpenter's a little bit older. They're both players that I think are probably more valued by their current clubs than they would be in free agency. I think they're both players who looked at the free agent landscape and decided, I don't want to be a free agent at the age of 31, 32, 33, whatever it is. I like where I am, and I do think that's I remember reading something back during spring when all these extensions were starting to fly around that Davis had said, hey, I'm not looking for the biggest extension. I just want to stay here. I don't care about making every last dollar. I like it here. So I'm not surprised that this is kind of where we've ended up, and I do think that, part of it probably is, the fact that, like you said, Davis is he's a great hitter, but that's pretty much all he's got. He's an okay base runner. He's a bad defender. He makes sense for this Oakland team, but I'm sure there are plenty of other teams where just look at him and go, nope, you're pretty much a future DH, and we don't really have any interest in that at the moment, especially paying you whatever it is you and your agent will be looking for. So, no, I'm not surprised that this is what he ended up with. Like I said, I compare it to what Carpenter got, and that it feels like an underpay based on what he can do. But it makes sense based on all the context around him. And I do think a lot of that probably, too, is, hey, I like where I am. I don't want to leave where I am. So, I'll take whatever feels, at the very least, fair to me.
Hey, I want to ask you about the Chicago Cubs, John. And, a couple years ago, finally exercised the curse, have been a playoff team, high payroll, obviously a lot of expectation there. But look at that division. Cardinals added a lot of power, and they obviously are always going to be in the running. Milwaukee, rose up and kind of took the Central out from under them. And even Pittsburgh's playing some really good ball to start the season. I know it's early, and, at the end of the day, they're 3.5 games out, and you expect over the summer they're going to get it right. But any concern there with the Cubbies? And, what do you think is their biggest issue right now?
Their bullpen, bullpen. Their bullpen is terrible. They need another reliever. They needed to assign Craig Kimbrell back in, December. Luckily for them, they still can go sign Craig Kimbrell if they want. For some reason, they have not signed Craig Kimbrell, and I could say that about 12 other teams that desperately should be, phoning Craig Kimbrell's agent every single hour on the hour. But their bullpen is bad, and with the news that Brandon Morrow has been shut down indefinitely because he had a setback in his rehab, they need bullpen help. Yesterday, but Kimbrell would be a great start. I imagine they will probably be checking out whatever veteran relievers are kind of available. They'll probably be in trade rumors, but who knows, because they seemingly don't want to spend anymore for reasons. I think the other thing would be that, there probably has to be a little concern about Yu Darvish and whether or not he is, a stable, someone you can kind of count on going forward. He's been better. His first start of the year was a disaster. He's been better since then, but he still hasn't really been, Yu Darvish. He hasn't been the guy the Cubs thought they were going to get when they gave him $125 million.
Terrible.
Pretty shaky. John Lester is getting older. Kyle Hendricks is pretty good, but he's also kind of had a semi-rough start to the season. They need a little help, or they need their pitching to get better. And I'm just not totally sure that's something they can necessarily count on. I mean, this is where I would say you might as well just go get Dallas Keuchel too. But that's to me, Keuchel is a much harder thing to figure out than Kimbrell, because Keuchel's going to need a lot of time to get himself ready. So,
right.
I think pitching wise is probably, pitching is what the Cubs need, especially relief help, because that offense is great. Their lineup is a great lineup. Their defense is a little shaky, but who is it? And the other thing is the rest of the NL Central has plenty of flaws too. The Brewers have no pitching staff to speak of. The Cardinals have their bullpen's also kind of a mess, but I'd say the Cardinals are kind of like a Cubs light right now. They're good in the same way the Cubs are, but just not quite as good. So it's and certainly looks like, you know, I know the Pirates, you said, are doing well, but I don't expect that to last.
Right.
And the Reds' bid at contention doesn't really seem to have gone anywhere. So the Central is there. You know, there's not a team really just, you know, running away with it right now. So if the Cubs can just find a way to add relief help and maybe some rotation help, I think, you know, they'd be in pretty good shape going forward.
Yeah, and you talked about Keuchel, and I think that's a big reason why he's not signed, you know, the velocity factor, et cetera. But the Kimbrel thing, I can't come to terms with it. Has he priced himself out? Is he holding out for an amount that he's never going to get? Is he in too deep now? I mean, it's hard for me to imagine with all these teams with bullpen issues aren't knocking on Craig Kimbrel's door.
To me, it feels like a few factors. One thing is that we haven't really heard from either Kimbrel or his agent what he's looking for. The last we had heard was way back in December when they were supposedly looking for a 5 or 6 year contract, which was never going to happen. But, you know, that's a perfectly acceptable starting point for a reliever as good as Craig Kimbrel is. I know there were some rumors a few people put out about a week or so ago that Kimbrel was willing to take a 3 year deal, but that's, you know, a bit unsubstantiated. I think the other part of the problem now is that since he had the qualifying offer given to him by Boston, he still has draft pick compensation. So I think, you know, there's a possibility that maybe once the draft is over and once we get past the draft in June, teams might be willing to, you know, once that's no longer an issue, then they can jump in. And I think I think Ken Rosenthal had this idea way back in February that he would represent pretty much at that point a deadline acquisition, who'd be a better bet than presumably any reliever available on the market, and just play out the season on a prorated contract. It's silly that we're even at this point. Someone should have signed him already, but I also imagine that for a lot of teams, bullpens are a thing that you feel like you can fix both internally and because it's just, even to this point in April, we're still dealing with guys who've thrown a grand total of 10, 11 innings. You know, that what you've seen so far isn't necessarily representative of what you're going to see going forward. I mean, like I said, the wins and losses still matter and count. But you maybe, you know, if you're a front office, you can tell yourself, hey, it's fine. Things will improve. These guys are better than this. You know, we don't want to do anything drastic until May or June or something. But it just never should have gotten to this point. Someone should have signed Craig Kimbrel. There were plenty of teams before the season even started, the Cubs being one of them, where you could look at that bullpen and go, no, you need another reliever. You need another good reliever. Craig Kimbrel's right there. Go sign Craig Kimbrel. So, I don't know. I think at this point, if he does sign this season, it's probably not going to be till after the draft, because teams are presumably going to use the qualifying offer and draft compensation as the excuse. But, again, that's the most frustrating thing is just we don't know anything. It's just been this weirdly kind of fact-free environment around him since about January. So,
you know, with the Giants, Farhan Zaidi came in, and, of course, he learned how to do all this from Billy Bean. And in Oakland, of course, they're sometimes on the cheap. And I kind of saw that with Fickell Farhan in the beginning, because it was, I want Andreoli. No, I want Michael Reed. No, I want Connor Joe. No, I want some Rule 5 guys. No, wait, it's Tyler Austin. Now, finally, Kevin Pillar. That's the guy. So it's just, we're just in this feeling out process for this year for Giants fans and waiting for that one trade deadline, July 31st, to move Bumgarner. Is this whole season just kind of a lab experiment?
Pretty much. That's kind of what the sense I got when the Giants didn't really do anything this winter. I know they were in on Harper and were one of the finalists, but nothing that Zaidi's done in that sense has surprised me, because especially in the outfield, which is something that, you know, previous Giants front offices have for some reason decided was not a thing they needed to address ever, and just have left Zaidi with this thing where all he has left to do is play guys like Connor Joe and Michael Reed or Tyler Austin. I actually like Pillar for the Giants. He makes a lot of sense just given what his skill set is for that particular ballpark. But yeah, I think unfortunately for Giants fans, this is probably going to be what the year is. It's just going to be a guy, you know, kind of just trying stuff out, kind of just cycling through options, seeing what sticks, seeing what doesn't. It kind of reminds me of what Jerry DePoto has been doing in Seattle, just constantly just cycling through players to see kind of if there's any kind of hidden gems, guys who can unlock some potential, you know, maybe some undervalued guys because, you know, there just doesn't seem to be kind of a young, healthy core there anymore. It certainly doesn't seem like any of the older guys are capable of bouncing back in that. Because I think I said before the season that the Giants' only real hope for a contending season or anything close to it was for those older guys like Posey and Crawford and Belt and, you know, the rest to look more like their 2010 to 2016 selves. And that really just has not happened. I know Belt was playing well, but everybody else just seems to be kind of on the downswing. So for this point, I think that's really the only sensible thing the Giants can do is just kind of keep going through the options they have, seeing if anyone really makes sense going forward. Because the truth is, I think at this point it's become clear that all you can do now at this point is try to figure out what the next core of the Giants is, because it's the guys who are there are not going to be that anymore.
That is John Taylor. Make sure to read him in SI on SI.com, Sports Illustrated. Follow him on Twitter at J.A. Taylor, and that's L-E-R. John, thanks for your time and your insights. Great stuff as always.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's funny here, Ryan, when you look at the Giants, and of course their best prospects are at the A-ball level, and, you know, Bart's got a broken hand now, but you look at Eliel Ramos. And so you think about, well, why did Farhan go through all these outfielders? You look at the River Cats. Now, sometimes your best prospects are at Double A, but you look at the River Cats right now at the outfielders, and you got Anthony Garcia, Mark Gerber, Henry Ramos, Michael Reed's down there. Austin Slater probably thought he was going to make the team. Mack Williamson probably thought he was going to make the team. And then, of course, the great name, Yaz, Mike Yastrzemski, the grandson of Carl Yastrzemski. But you know, this guy was a 14th round pick by the Orioles 6 years ago out of Vanderbilt. So the cupboard is a little bit bare. So I would just tell Giants fans, look, before you want to, you know, burn the stadium to the ground, those three rings in 5 years, most teams experience what you're experiencing right now every damn year. So just polish up those rings, take it to the solar plexus, go to the games, eat popcorn, have fun, and look at those rings. And then look ahead a couple of years and just have a fun summer with little expectations.
And I mean, if you're being real about the situation, that's exactly what you need to do. I think my issue with the Giants is they feel like their fan base isn't willing to tolerate whatever you want to say, that they need to go through a rebuild. And if they just come out and said, hey, if it means selling these guys for pennies on the dollar. And I know some of these guys got no movement clauses, but you tell them you go to Crawford or Posey and say, look, we got to rebuild. Like, we'll give you some input in where you get traded, but we're moving on and we got to get younger. We got to replenish this farm system. I feel like Giants fans by and large would be more apt to embrace that than the notion of, nah, we're good. We just need to add a piece here, a piece there. We're going to find some diamonds in the rough. No, man. Like, they're painfully behind the times. And yeah, three World Series in 5 years, that was awesome. But we're now 5 years removed from that last World Series win. So that matters less and less every day. And really, who it doesn't matter to is Farhan Zaidi. Like, he's got a job to do. And that's helped this team win and ultimately going forward. The other stuff matters not, which I think in the grand scheme of things is great, because this team was desperate for a fresh approach and to kind of clean that slate. I just feel like as long as they continue to sell that notion that they're beneath a rebuild or that's not something, a plausible course of action for them, then they're just kind of going to be waddling in mediocrity, or even more to the point, they're going to be waddling in this abyss of nothingness. And so it's going to, regardless of whether you're going to do it through free agency and hope that, you know, you add some pieces to a guy like Joey Bart and maybe you find some of these diamonds in the rough, or you do the full-on rebuild route, either way, it's going to take a while. So I think, you know, the sooner they can get real about that, the sooner they can actually, you know, it's kind of like an alcoholic. What's the first step? Admitting you got a problem, right? I mean, for the Giants, the first step is admitting that they're garbage. And, I mean, it's great that you won three World Series titles in 5 years, but I ain't helping you in 2019, man. It's not.
I said, look in the mirror. I am garbage.
Right, exactly. That's it.
That's
baby.
That's what you want them to do.
Yeah, because you are. Like, we can all see it. And, yeah. You know, I'm not like, they're good people. I'm not trying to throw shade on them. And, right. Hey, the career accomplishments of, you know, Posey and Bumgarner, much love, man. But you know what? You know how you showed your appreciation for that? You paid them a major league salary those years, right? I mean,
you know, those millions of dollars they made those years, that was you showing the appreciation. It's this notion of, like, we gotta make sure we show them all this respect. And no, man, like, it's a business, so it's okay. It's just get real about it. I mean, it's reality check time. They're awful. And if they continue to just straw out the same lineup, I think most Giants fans, I don't mind, you know, it's kind of, I've watched a lot of bad teams in my life. And when it's clear that it's time for a change, I don't necessarily mind watching players suck. I just want to watch different players suck. Okay. And seriously, because what are you telling me that at this point, Brandon Belt's the answer? I mean, come on. Like, he's never going to be a factor as long as AT&T Park, or excuse me, Oracle Park, has the dimensions that they do. It's not happening.
All right, that's Ryan Covey. I'm Rick Tittle. We still got a lot of time for your calls. We're going to bring in Sam Esfandiari from Warriors World at about 10:15, and we're going to go heavy dubs in that last subject. We'll talk some hoop on the other side as well. But lines are open. Would love your participation on a Easter Sunday, 9:44 in the a.m. The number to call, 888-957-9570. And you can always text us on the Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. Come on back, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
One of my favorite samples. Thank you very much for that. And it's Rick Tittle and Ryan Covey. 95.7 The Game. Easter Sunday. Happy Easter for those of you who celebrate it. Happy sunny Sunday to everybody else. It's always time to talk sports here as we take you up to live coverage of Warriors basketball here on your home of the Warriors, 95.7 The Game. Game 4 in Los Angeles. The pregame will start right here at 11 o'clock. The tip-off will happen at 12:30. What? That early? Yes, that early. Just another reminder. And I know that's odd for teams that play indoors for a quote-unquote day game, but this is what we have, a day game, 12:30 tip, as the NBA wants to do these games back-to-back-to-back-to-back, as you might imagine. Sam Esfandiari, our own 95.7 The Game talent on Sunday nights, Warriors World contributor, co-host of the Light Years podcast. He'll join us at 10:15. Rick Tittle and Ryan Covey with you. And the Chilton Auto Body text line is 95795. The toll-free line is 888-957-9570. With that being said, let's go to Freakmont with Coach P. What's up, Coach?
Hey, what's up, guys? Good morning. Happy Easter Sunday. You know, I heard you guys talking about the Gigantes, you know, a little bit the Warriors earlier. And they're kind of – what I see going on with the Giants is what I don't want happening with the Warriors. That's kind of how I'm tying two things in there. First of all, with the Giants, I felt like after the 2016 season, they should have kind of realized where they were. I mean, 2017 was understandable, but then when you go 2 years kind of being one of the loudest teams in baseball, it should, you know, you should have kind of woke up from there. I even feel like this year, no disrespect to Boach, one of the best managers ever, you know what I mean? I'm not going to knock that, but I just feel like this whole tribute to him this year is kind of holding them back. I mean, they're going to have another, as you could say, a wasted year. I mean,
Are you saying that if they had a different manager, they would be better?
No. I'm saying their future would be better. Basically, they wouldn't be better. I mean, Boach, like I said, Boach is amazing, but I feel like basically they're going to hold on to pieces that should be dealt during the you know, All Star break because it's Boach's year. That's how I feel. Basically, that's how I'm kind of tying that thing in. But the reason why I bring up the Warriors is because right now the Warriors, this could be the last great year. I mean, a lot of things kind of point to that. You know, the whole bickering, the locker room, what's going on with KD. A lot of people kind of, I guess, over Draymond's kind of, you know, his leadership and all that. I mean, I love Draymond. I feel like he is a very smart player and is kind of the heart of the team. You know, Steph's the face. Draymond might be the heart and the toughness of the team. But right now, I think the Warriors, after this season, you know what I mean, I still got my money on them winning it all. You know, it's going to be a lot tougher. This Rocket series coming up. I mean, I'm not – obviously, they still got to win two more, you know, got to handle business. But this Rocket series coming up, it's going to be challenging. It's definitely going to be challenging. And I still feel like after all this, after, you know, they win it, the parade and all that, if they do, knock on wood, you know what I mean, I feel like the Warriors kind of need to look at where they're at,
see who needs to be kept and who needs to kind of, who they kind of need to move on from. Because
all right, hey, Coach P, yeah, thanks for your call, man. We want to Ryan and I want to get a little reaction, and the lines are open at 888-957-9570. He was calling him Tremont, I think, because he's shooting some trays lately.
I got it.
But just to go back for a second about the Giants, and he said the rebuild should have happened earlier. I disagree, because your window to open, when it's open to win, can shut for 40 years, like we saw with the Warriors. I thought the window was still open when they had Posey and Crawford. They still liked Panic. They gave Belt a lot of money. They had faith in him. They gave Melanson a lot of money, and only now is Melanson pitching well. They didn't know Bumgarner was going to get hurt. They made a mistake on Samardzija. Johnny Cueto got hurt. So they went for it. And they wanted to win because the window was still open. They still had so many pieces from a three World Series title team. Now we all know that there's a rebuild, and no one knows that more than the Giants. That's why they went out and they said thank you to Bobby Evans and Brian Sabian, and they got a new guy. They got a metrics guy, and now they know that they have to start over. But I don't disparage them in trying to hold on like to sheer death to that window and try to keep it open. I thought they had a chance, and they went for it, and it didn't work out.
Yeah, and after the playoff series against the Cubs, you figured, okay, well, the shortcoming of this team has been the bullpen, right? They need a closer.
And they got one.
Yeah, nobody took exception when they went out and got Mark Melanson. That was just A plus B equals C, like, and it just didn't work out. And then everything else started to go off the rails. All the stuff you alluded to. Bumgarner on a dirt bike. Johnny Cueto needs surgery. I mean, it was just one thing after another. Samardzija loses his game. And then you culminate that with Buster Posey's now nicked up. Joe Panic's had injury troubles. Brandon Belt's, you know, gets concussed seemingly every other week. I mean, it didn't stop. And they didn't have enough depth to cope with those broadsides to their top-end talent. The one time, Rick, where I really felt like, okay, you're just not being real about your situation, was going out and acquiring Evan Longoria. Yeah. To me, that signified, wow, y'all just don't get it. Like, and that's when I started to hear from Giants fans that real division of, hey, you know, I applaud them. They're still going for it. We believe in this core. And the more reasonable side of the fan base was, nope, what the hell are they doing? It's time to move on from this core. They were champions, and that's great. But how often do you have a team that, you know, will have a moment in time, a period of time, like three titles in 5 years, and then be dormant for a handful of seasons, and then all of a sudden refine their championship touch, like with, you know, a lot of those same pieces? I think those instances are pretty far and few between. It's just time for the next generation. The problem is, Bobby Evans handed out a bunch of bad contracts, and whether it was paying guys retroactively or, committing long term to guys that, like the Brandon Belt contract, for example. You telling me somebody else out there in Major League Baseball is going to give Brandon Belt that kind of cheese? Like, I understand the desire to commit to your players, lock them up long term. I understand all that, but it just didn't work out. And now you've got some guys that have got no movement clauses. As I mentioned in the last segment, I do think they might be willing, more amenable to being traded if they came to them, and, you know, they maybe had a little hand in where they went. I think there's something to that. But really, it's going to start, Rick, with scouting. It's going to start with, going out and getting some young players. And really, it's a law of averages. It's going to be, and like the way, and I almost in a lot of ways enjoy the way Farhan's doing it, where he's bringing guys in. Maybe you might want to give him a longer look than he's been giving him, but that's how you find Max Muncy, right? I mean, and that's exactly what they're looking for. Chris Taylor, that's exactly what they're looking for right now. And that's what you hope Farhan can do. I know that Giants fans want to get this thing turned around, but it's going to be a process. So I would tell you, kick back. This year they're going to stink, okay? Continue to support the team, because if you are a true fan, you should be showing up. A la the way Dubs fans did. Coach P wanted to invoke some similarities between Warriors and Dubs. Well, what did Warriors fans do for years when they stunk, Rick? They still showed up at Oracle, right? They still rooted on that team, by and large. And I think Giants fans, this is the time when the chips are down where you show your fandom and you stick with the team. But I also think it's imperative that they come out and give us a little bit more information about the direction that they're headed.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Max Muncy, who was a fifth-round pick by the A's out of Baylor. And this is a few fan fests ago when we were the A station and we were doing the show from the West Side Club. I think it was me and Guy Haberman. And we had Max sit down, and he couldn't have been more shy and just more polite and soft-spoken. And if you had told me when the A's got rid of him, there was not one A's fan that cried about it. And that's, you know, as I said, every once in a while you're going to find a late bloomer like that. All right. By the way, you are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. We're going to go all hoop now. We got an hour until we begin. We're going to bring in Sam Esfandiari. This is a story out of the New York Times. I'd like to get your thoughts, Ryan. Apparently, Rick Pitino has talked to Dan Gilbert, the Cavs owner, about maybe being the head coach. We know Pitino I thought he was persona non grata after yet another scandal. And, of course, after Louisville fired him and the whole pay-for-play thing, and he's had some other personal scandals as well. But he went to Panathinaikos, which we know is a great soccer team as well, in Greece. And when he was there, he only lost one game in the Greek league, and then they went to the Euro league, and he was about 500, and that's a tough league. But your thoughts. Now, when Rick Pitino, his first go-around with the Knicks wasn't that bad. He's definitely a guy who can coach. But if you're Dan Gilbert, and do you want him because, I mean, do you think he's too old and washed up? Do you think, I don't want the scandals, I don't want all these side questions? Or do you think, damn it, he's a good coach, and I don't care about that other stuff? What do you think?
Oh, boy. I mean, here we are in 2019 talking about Rick Pitino in the NBA. Isn't there a young assistant somewhere that would be more worthy of leading your basketball team?
Jaron Collins.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, there's the NBA is chock full of bright young assistants. Do we really need to go the old retread route, especially with a guy with as many warts as Rick Pitino? Like, seriously? And how many lives is this guy going to get? Does anybody not really seem to understand Rick Pitino? Like, he's not a good dude. Like, he's unscrupulous, okay? He's underhanded. He's shady as hell.
I like unscrupulous. That's
right?
A good word.
You like that?
Yeah. It's like diabolical.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's Rick Pitino. And, I mean, really, yeah, he's had success, but has, in the last decade, I mean, has Rick Pitino really blown us all away with his track record of leaving a trail of defeated opponents in his wake? Oh, man, I mean, he's a good coach. He's always going to be a better college coach because I think so much of college basketball is really just the ability to recruit.
Being smooth.
Yeah, exactly. Just to be able to recruit, roll into a family's home and be like, yo, I'm Rick Pitino, right? As opposed to just, hey, I'm Jaron Collins. You know, it's like, yeah, great, dude. Like, Rick Pitino got the nice suit, and he can schmooze a mother. Like, his shtick, if you want to call it, I think goes a lot further with college athletes, and I think it resonates with them. NBA players, they'd be like, dude, who is this old hack? Get him out of here. But it also goes to show how desperate Dan Gilbert is to get that thing back on track. Because let's face it, Cleveland, They're awful. And aside from, like, winning the NBA draft lottery, there ain't really a quick fix in sight for that team either. They're going to be bad for a very long time. Now, thankfully, LeBron won them a title. You talked about Giants fans, rest your head and polish off those rings and rest your head. Cavs fans, you got your ring. That better hold you for, like, the next decade.
Yeah, Pitino, I think the last time he was in the league, like, 2001 with the Celtics. I mean, it's been a long time. We were talking earlier about some of the other series going on. The one that we didn't get to, let's get to it now, and that's San Antonio-Denver, which is shaping up to be a pretty good series at 2-2. And here you have Denver, new kids on the block, and for a while there I thought,
hanging tough.
We're going to be, who's that?
New Kids on the Block, bro.
I couldn't tell
hanging
you one song.
Hanging tough. Get out
of
here.
Is that the one with Timberlake, New Kids on the Block?
No, that was NSYNC, bro.
NSYNC.
Come on, get your boy band game up, Tittle. Let's go.
I'm not. I'm too busy listening to Menudo and O-Town.
Okay.
You know what? I gotta leave early to go to the BTS concert. No, I don't know. I know who Timberlake is. I didn't know what band he was in.
So, fair enough. It's all right.
No, it's not my music.
It's not your bag?
No.
Actually, New Kids on the Block, you know when they were big? When I was at Adams Middle School, our alma mater.
Okay, that's right. When I was there, it was Adams Junior High. When did they change to Adams Middle School?
Probably when they integrated sixth grade. I don't know.
Oh, they did?
Well, yeah, it's a middle school. That's what middle school is. Six, seven, eight.
You kids today with your purple hair and your Sony Walkman. So this series, you know, when you look at Denver thinking, you know, oh, we're the number one seed, and the Warriors reminded them a few times outside of their first meeting, No, you're not going to be the one seed. And then you have the Spurs. And the most savvy coach maybe in NBA history, 22.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.